episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me this evening. Guys, how's everybody doing?
Good.
I'm pretty good.
Great. Let's see here. We have a great Toronto recap to discuss, some fan questions, an Iowa preview, and obviously everybody's favorite pitfalls at the end. So let's dive right into it. Again, just in case you forgot, the top five from Toronto were Pagenaud, Dixon, Rossi, Newgarden, Rosenquist. I would say, I don't know if you guys agree or disagree, but I think Simon Pagenaud had the definition of perfect weekend. And he didn't make a mistake at all. Got the pole, got the win, drove a great race, practiced great all three practices. Did Simon do anything wrong all weekend?
Didn't lead every lap. I don't know. That's about it.
I was going to say, I can't think of a thing to throw in there. So no, he did super well.
I mean, yeah. Even press conferences were golden with some, you know, he was in a good mood. Good for Simon. He's really, you know, kind of catapulted himself back into the championship discussion when everybody started saying it was a two-horse race, me included. So sorry, Simon. Next Toronto thing that I think is interesting that people kind of said that the race was boring. What do you guys think?
I wouldn't say boring. I mean, it wasn't the most exciting, but I didn't think I was going to lay down on the couch and take a nap either. So I think it was someplace kind of in between. I thought there was a few good things that were going on. It was kind of interesting. I definitely wouldn't say it was a snoozer.
Yeah, I'd describe it as, like, I don't know, to be fancy, maybe like scintillating. Like, you know, you think something's around the corner every lap. Something might happen. Someone might crash. Or, you know, for example, like Sato's engine failure, just things like that to keep you on your toes. The finish was looking like it may be pretty cool, and it was still a little exciting with Dixon catching Pagenaud, but yeah, all in all, Pagenaud had a great race, and I wouldn't have called boring either. I was pleasantly entertained for not being the most dramatic race ever, but I still liked it.
Yeah, I think especially in the first half of the race, there was a, you know, a bunch of passing going on. There was a lot of stuff happening, and they spread out partway through, and then the end got pretty interesting again, like you said. Before I get to probably best story of the weekend and Robert Wickens, who would you guys pick for driver of the day be?
I think low-hanging fruit's Pagenaud. So if I had to pick someone other than Pagenaud, I'd say Felix Rosenquist had a pretty good day. Even though he lost positions in the race, started third, finished fifth, I like how he kept everything together, was consistent, didn't crash, didn't hit a wall, didn't seem like he did anything wrong. And to come home fifth, again, even though he lost a couple places, to me is just a solid finish and something to build on for him.
I'm going to go with Hinchcliffe. He had a good day. He had a solid day for that team, and they desperately needed it. And I think that, you know, it helped having Robert start the race, and it helped being in his hometown. So I definitely am going to have to say Hinch.
Well, Jess, I'm a little mad that I didn't go before you, but thankfully I had a backup planned. Colton Herta, after a string of, you know, four or five DNFs in a row, finally getting back into the swing of things here, really probably had his worst qualifying of the season, if I'm not mistaken, and to finish the race seventh, had some good battles there with Sebastian Bourdais, I believe, and Graham Rahal. So good on him just to solidly finish the race in the top 10. And, you know, Jess touched on it, but Robert Wickens, what a story. His Acura NSX had people taking pictures with it all weekend. It was a beautiful car. I asked my wife if we could buy one, and she said we could sell the house. So I just wanted that on record so that when everybody listens to this, they can back me up.
When you're homeless and you're recording from your car.
But listen, I'll have a really nice car. And isn't that really what's important?
God, that's such a
sure
logic right there. I love the logic. That's you right. Cannot punch a hole in that one.
Thank you. Anyway, the Robert Wickens tribute. Man, that was so cool. I'll get your guys' opinion first before I chime in, since you guys weren't at the track. But what did you guys think from what you were able to see on TV?
So I don't do a lot of crying, even though I'm a girl, and I was bawling like a baby and clapping my hands and squealing because he was so excited. So I was so excited. It was just amazing to watch.
I think he described it as one of the most therapeutic things he's done so far. And yeah, just to see him so happy and to kind of see Carly in the front seat, you know, squealing a little bit when he got close to a wall. And then honestly, the crowd reaction too, with them just going crazy around every turn, it was so awesome. And again, you know, kind of like what we had touched on last week with just all the people that came together to make that happen, for him to kind of get behind the wheel and realize that it is possible, hopefully, is just one more thing on the road to recovery, is to get him back in a car someday. And it was just super awesome to see.
Yeah, I agree with that. And just talking about it now gives me goosebumps again. And glad that his ankle surgery today on Wednesday went well. So back on the mend again. But I enjoyed watching Carly's reaction of him getting close to the wall. It gave me a little bit of a chuckle, and especially considering he bent one of the wheels practicing the day before. And when they asked him about that in the press conference, he laughed it off like, yeah, what's the big deal? So it's good to see that he's still got that, you know, racer mentality, even when he's, back in the car for the first time in 10 months or so. Moving on from that, just a quick recap of our predictions from last week. Matt did really well. I did not. Matt picked Dixon to do well. I picked Zach Veach. Zach Veach didn't have a terrible day, but kind of a nondescript day. And Knapp really, Knapp did worse on this than me with picking Will Power to do well. Our struggle predictions, I predicted Dale Coyne to not do well, and they did decent. Santino Ferrucci had a terrible qualifying and then came back and finished 11th. And Mr. Knapp picked the rookies to struggle, and three out of the four rookies finished in the top 11. So Matt definitely won this round, which makes me very sad. But there's a lot of storylines from Toronto for a race that was considered by some to be boring. Spencer Pigot and Ed Jones, teammates, had a little bit of a dust up there about 2/3 of the way through the race where, Matt, what did you think of it?
It's kind of reminiscent of last year, as Connor Daly had pointed out on Twitter, with Jones putting Daly, who was in the Harding car last year, kind of into the wall at the same area. I don't know. I would have loved to see what Ed Carpenter had to say about the whole thing. I bet he's not too thrilled with what he saw. It was a bummer for Pigot because Pigot's front wing was bent a little, and then Jones was actually having a pretty good day up until that point, and then he faded. So I think there definitely could have been some more cooperation there and maybe a little more room for Pigot on the outside. At the end of the day, though, who knows what's going on. If Jones is having to drive for his ride for next year or whatnot, it might start to be desperation time for him. So it might make sense, question mark, but it was still a little, we'll call it, impolite. Is that fair?
I think that's definitely a fair assessment. I did like one thing that I don't remember who said it during the broadcast, but one of them said something along the lines of, if you thought that there were team orders in IndyCar, this right here proves that you're wrong. So they were both fighting for it, even though they knew they were teammates and it could have gone really bad. But I did like to see teammates kind of, you know, get after it a little bit.
Yeah, that's a great point. I did not hear that, obviously, but whoever said that, congrats to them. That's
completely. I think that was the official IndyCar account that said that.
There you go. Well, thank you, Dakota, or whoever was posting on Twitter during the race. So the big topic going into the weekend was that the red tires would fall off similar to how they did in Detroit. But it seemed like the red tires had a little bit more life on Sunday. I don't know what day it is anymore. On Sunday than Detroit, which I was okay with. I don't know if you guys have any agreements or disagreements on that one.
I mean, I think that both sets could have fallen off a little more than they did. I think that would have added a little excitement for the people who thought the race was boring. But I can't say that I was disappointed with it because, you know, I feel like it played out pretty fair for everyone on both sets of tires. So I thought it was okay.
I personally like agreeing with Jess, if I'm being honest. And so this is one of those cases where I think she's 100% right. With it, when it comes to, yes, it could have fallen off more, but no, it's not like the racing was worse because of it. So I thought it was all in all good job by Firestone altogether.
This is one of those weird ones where we're all pretty much going to agree with each other.
I like that. I don't know. It's all about camaraderie or something.
Yeah.
Every now and then for us, supposedly.
Yeah, I you know, listening to the scanner, the first, especially before the first stint of pit stops, there were a bunch of guys complaining or frustrated that their rear tires, the ones that were on reds, were fading very quickly. So I think in the end they were able to, you know, manage it and put on a good show, but there was still, you know, enough tire fall off. I think that, you know, Firestone did a good job there. So, you know, we talked about Mr. Knapp's prediction of Willpower doing well this weekend. Similar to when I pick Willpower to do well, it never goes right. I have two questions here for you guys. Answer both at the same time if you want. First off, are his championships hopes dashed, being that he is now about 128 points back? And part two of that is going back to lap one of Toronto when he dive bombed into, I believe, Graham Rahal. You can correct me if that got the second part of the driver wrong there. And then didn't get a penalty, which raised the eyebrows of many people, including Graham Rahal on the radio. What'd you guys think?
When you hesitated when you said, before you said 128, did you guess that? Because you were spot on.
No, I have Racing Reference up, so I just need to find what screen it was on.
I was going to say, you hesitated, and then you just happened to guess the right number, so I was about to praise
you. Did you really think he wasn't cheating?
No, I didn't think Mike cheated anymore.
Come on, man. You know better than that.
I thought we were past those days.
I don't like this ganging up on me. It's all, we're only 14.
Well, hang on a second. I was defending you. I thought you were a genius for a second.
Well, I'm going to record that part right there and show it to my wife later on.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, just don't sell a house while you show it to her. let's see. Part one, yes, his championship hopes are gone. Part two, I would say, yes, he should have gotten a penalty, but as we were kind of discussing in the Patreon group chat, is that, you know, the incident itself and him going a lap down was also a penalty in a way. I will not expand on more of my thoughts because I'll save that for later in the episode.
Okay, so first part of the question, is his hope for championship gone? Absolutely. Like, there's no doubt in my mind he will not be able to make it back up. And then if he should have gotten a penalty, I watched it a couple times, and I don't think so. I mean, I just think that it was bad enough, you know, going a lap down, and especially that early in the race, that he really just messed himself up more than anything. So I think that he got away okay.
Yeah, you know, in the heat of the moment when I saw it, I was very confused why he didn't get a penalty. Texting my dad, like I always do during the race, we were very confused why he didn't get a penalty. And then I watched the replay a couple of times. And yeah, I mean, he does kind of dive bomb into the corner there, but the other guy, you know, he almost sets himself up to have no room and go in a lap down, and the other guys, you know, spun but were able to recover pretty quickly. I think it's, you know, it is what it is. I don't really have a big issue with it in the end. His championship hopes, it's crazy to think that, you know, he's in fifth and his championship hopes are pretty much gone, but unless he wins five out of the remaining six races or something along those lines, I think we're all in agreement on that one. And isn't it kind of crazy that you know, people are saying that Will Powers had a bad season, and he has had an uncharacteristically not great year, and he's still fifth in points.
Yeah, that's kind of Will Power for you, because he just has a handful of really, really good races in the season, even if it's quote-unquote not his best year.
Yeah, this is definitely not his best year, and it is extremely shocking after seeing some of his results how well he is doing.
Yeah, very, very well said. Hopefully he can at least get a race win. I don't know the last time. I'd have to cheat and look it up.
Gosh, I think it must have been 2006 if I had to guess. Because it was almost 2013 and then he won the finale.
Right. So moving on, wrapping up one more thing here, Toronto related, and this is a quick one. You have to feel for Takuma Sato. Starts off the weekend with a little wrestling match with Sebastian Bourdais, has a great qualifying effort, has a really steady race, you know, no attack, no chance, kind of was a let's just play it safe and finish fifth or sixth, and then his engine catches on fire. So kind of feel bad for Sato there. He's been one of the better storylines of the year so far, so hopefully they can rebound this weekend in Iowa. I almost forgot where we were going this weekend. But that about wraps it up for the lovely city of Toronto.
I got one thing to throw in here real quick.
Yeah.
We made a bet in the beginning of the season about fantasy IndyCar, and the loser would have to buy a Marco shirt.
I'm definitely going to lose.
I just wanted to point out to the lovely people at home that currently Mike Jokum is in last of the three of us. So Jess, I'm going to do my best to keep it up. I would appreciate if you did your best to keep it up so we can see Mike in a Marco shirt.
Hey, I'm on an upward swing right now because I was really, really far down, and I've made up like, I don't know, 12 positions or something in the past two races. So I'm going to keep on keeping on.
Yay.
Not only am I losing in that league, but my father and I have our public IndyCar fantasy. I don't want to call it a league because it's just, you know, we just play against each other, and my dad is whooping my butt every week, and I don't even know if he's watched a practice yet this year outside of the Indy 500 practices. So I'd like to think I do my research, but I pick wrong every week.
So what you're saying is don't listen to your predictions, listen to me and Matt.
That's the opposite of what I'm saying, because I need find some way to come back. So if you pick bad like me, maybe I'll get one right and I'll jump up a little.
More powerful logic. I like it.
Oh boy. Well, it has been a night of interesting logic, we'll say. We're going to jump into a couple fan questions here. How about it, guys?
Yep.
All right. So our first one is going to be from Mark Van Niekerk, and he wants to know, will Pato Award go down as one of the greats that got away from IndyCar? And can we think of any others that got away that had good success elsewhere?
Oh, boy. So I'm going to answer the first part first. I don't know if we... yes, Pato is a hell of a driver, but I don't know if we can consider him one of the greats that got away, because he didn't really have a lot of time to showcase his talent. In terms of who else got away, man, I guess we could say Danica, but that would just...
keyword there is success elsewhere.
Right. There's honestly nothing coming to mind right now. I don't know if you guys have any.
Well, I was going to say she dated / is dating Aaron Rodgers, but again, the keyword there is success. Gosh. I mean, yeah, because it's the part two that's tricky, because the only one that comes to my mind within the last 30 years is Jacques Villeneuve, who went on to win a Formula One championship after he left IndyCar. But you got Hornish, Franchitti, Danica, Bourdais, D'Amata. I don't know if Briscoe started in IndyCar and then went to F1. I think he did. He was just a test driver, though. But, you know, you got a lot of drivers who've left and, you know, not succeeded and had to come back or just, you know, retired or whatever. So I think the only one that comes to mind for me is Villeneuve. Maybe Montoya, but I don't know. And then as far as Pato, yeah, Mike was 100% correct in his evaluation that, yes, he's phenomenal and talented, but way too early to consider him a great driver or one of the greats of IndyCar. So, no, I don't think it's going to be a bummer for sure, but not one of the greats that got away.
Yeah, I have to agree. I can't say one of the greats that got away. I think if he would have had a little more time in IndyCar, maybe we could have evaluated that a little bit better. But I think that, you know, with the little time he did have, it hurt his, chances of me saying yes to this question when he didn't make the 500. And, you know, I definitely can't put him as one of the greats. But maybe, you know, maybe he'll be back. We don't know for sure that he's gone forever, and maybe he'll change our minds. And then as far as somebody who got away, I was going to say Hornish. Montoya is probably a pretty good one to put there too. They didn't have like huge success when they left, but they still were, you know, decent at what they were doing. So I think those would probably be my two picks, I guess.
Let me throw in one more here. Tony Stewart.
Ooh. Oh yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one. And Hornish, Hornish won a, whatever you call it nowadays, Xfinity. I think he won an Xfinity race at some point, didn't he?
Yeah, like Mid-Ohio or one of the...
I think he won a couple races, didn't he?
Did he really win Mid-Ohio? How random is that?
I'm going to cheat, look it up, so keep talking and we'll...
It's probably a good idea because I have no idea, but...
Oh, yeah, 2017 Mid-Ohio.
Oh, wait, was that recent too? Wow. Well, we'll attribute that to his IndyCar experience or something as I wink and nod.
Yes, I will agree as I am also nodding. Okay, so we're going to move on to the next fan question. This one's coming from our buddy George, and he wants to know who we think, what drivers we think are in the hot seat right now.
This is hard. This is a hard question because there's like drivers like Marco Andretti and Zach Veach and James Hinchcliffe, drivers who you think should be on the hot seat, but I don't know if they necessarily have to be worried per se. I don't know. I've been staring at this one since the beginning of the episode. I think to me, it's got to be Ed Jones. Again, with what's been going on as far as pace and practice and qualifying, and then races haven't really come together for him outside of the Grand Prix of Indy. And now this latest dust up with Piggott, I don't know if that went over favorably with the bosses. So it'll be interesting to see how his silly season plays out.
Before I get to mine real quick, Sam Hornish also won two Xfinity races at Iowa.
I knew he won more than one.
Hey, see, that's another IndyCar track. We can just thank IndyCar for that.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to throw one out there that maybe is less talked about, but with an average finishing position of only 11.2, James Hinchcliffe really needs to... And he started turning around his season with a very good Toronto race, but he really needs to, you know, put a couple top five finishes together this second half of the year.
All right. I can feel that. I am gonna go with one that might be sort of considered low hanging fruit, but I'm gonna say Max Chilton. I know he brings money to the team, but he really hasn't brought any results to the team. And at some point, I think Carlin is going to want to kind of start, building their empire, so to speak, because they do so well in so many series. I think that they'll start getting frustrated. So I think Max might need to put in a little extra work.
Random side note, I think someone in the broadcast, they said that Carlin had purchased the shocks or something from Penske, and Chilton said that made a world of difference this weekend.
Yes, I can confirm that is accurate.
That's kind of weird. You think that'll help them the rest of the year? I mean, obviously it'll help them, but do you think that'll make them see a significant improvement for the rest of the season?
Well, I mean, he did finish 14th, which is quite a good improvement for him. I mean, I hate to say that, but it's true.
You're right.
So I mean, it would be great if that really does help them kind of turn things around. I'm not saying I want to see Max gone. I just think that he might be in a little bit of trouble if he doesn't start inching his way up a little bit.
Yeah, and just to touch on Matt's point, yeah, I heard they spent around $80,000 for, you know, the Penske shocks, and if it helps, you know, good for them. It definitely seemed like it started to help this weekend. Max Chilton even outqualified Will Power. I feel like this is one of those, you know, you have to tell your grandkids a story for years that Matt made about Ben Hanley qualifying for the Indy 500 and Alonso not.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's crazy, though. $80,000 doesn't seem like that significant. Like, isn't that what, like, 2 lug nuts in F1 cost?
I know. That's what the
roughly
F1 costs. So I will jump into Patreon shout out before I get to the Stump the Host. So thank you this week to Michelle. It was great running into you in Toronto, Mr. Mike Knapp, Mike Silver, who I think we'll see this weekend. Thank you to Sean Crawford. Thank you, Stephen A. Clark, Mr. Stephen King. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend as well. Mr. Steve Baker, and thank you to Tyrone. So, and thank you to everybody for listening each week. So now it is time for a Stump the Host. This is not Iowa related. I'm bucking the tradition of our typical Stump the Host talking about whatever track we're about to go to. We are 11 races in, and there are 5 drivers that have led more than 100 laps this year. Can you guys name the 5 drivers?
Newgarden.
Okay, we got 1.
Pagano.
We got 2.
Power.
No.
Rossi.
Yes, that's 3.
Oh man, that's tough.
No, Dixon doesn't lend that much.
I can't confirm or deny any questions you may have because I have the stats right in front of me here.
Oh, well, I said Dixon.
Oh, then yes, 3.
I said Sato.
I'm sorry, what's that, Jess?
Sato.
That's 5.
Hey, look at that. Damn.
Unfortunately, Matt has 1 with 3 correct answers.
Whatever. I said Sato before he said Dixon, but that's fine.
Still 1.
It's okay, Jess. Mike's still going to finish last in fantasy.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, somehow, usually I still win anyways, so it's fine.
Yeah, Mike, have you been thinking about like certain brands of Marco's shirts, like the Snapple or the Venom or the maybe this year's?
Ooh, Venom. Venom would be good.
Definitely got to be Venom.
All right. I'm sure there's somewhere on eBay.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
What, you know, real quick, what's surprising about the lap leaders is right below the top 5 is Ryan Hunter-Reay with 90 laps led on the year, which kind of surprised me considering he hasn't had a championship caliber season.
When did Ryan Hunter-Reay lead 90 laps?
At some point this year.
That was super helpful.
Well, Mike's right though. It's like, you know, hasn't really stood out that much this season. It's not like he led half of Indy and then had an engine failure or something. So that's weird. Maybe my memory's just failing. But anyways, I think he's a good candidate to lead some laps this weekend at Iowa. So we'll segue into that one here. Championship outlook is looking like this. We're just going to list the top 4 because, as we said earlier, we think Power's kind of out of this one at this point. What is there, 6 races left?
Correct.
So with that, championship outlook is Joseph Newgarden leads the points, followed very closely by Rossi. Pagano made up some ground this weekend. And then Scott Dixon in 4th is lingering as always. The top 5 at last year's Iowa, and if you remember, last year's Iowa race had a pretty quote-unquote controversial finish with the will they throw a green flag, won't they throw a green flag, should we pit situation that happened. So it was Hinchcliffe who passed Newgarden late, followed by Piggott and finished 2nd. Sato, Newgarden went back to 4th, and then Wickens went back to 5th and cost himself a podium as well because they pitted. Carlin has got a lineup that is making a lot of fans at home happy with Connor Daly in the Gallagher car, normally occupied by Max Chilton. And then Sage Karam is back with as a sponsor. So it should be good. Great to see them back after you know, a nice showing at Toronto, and it sounds like all parties there were happy with how he did and whatnot. So, guys, I don't know if you have any thoughts about the Sage, Karen, Connor, Daly tandem at Carlin for the weekend.
Well, I'm really glad that you remembered that the sponsor name is.
How could I forget?
I think it's going to be fun to watch. I definitely think that they're going to have a better showing this weekend probably than they did last weekend. So I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, now that Sage has one race in this car, or I guess two now this year, he should be able to, you know, show a little bit more, especially on an oval in Iowa that he did very well at a couple years ago.
Do you think he's going to get any hand gestures from Ed Carpenter this time around?
Well, he got hand gestures from Ed Carpenter last time, apparently Santino Ferrucci last weekend. So listen, that's fine with me. If he's mixing it up, that means he's racing hard. And I know he, you know, he really wants to put on a good show for, you know, for everybody at Carlin and for everybody at Smart Stop Self Storage. Yeah. I let Matt do that one, or whoever that was. So I think they might, you know, have a half decent showing. I'm saying they're going to finish in the top five, but I think we might see more than, you know, a 19th place finish.
For a second there, I thought you said you would see them in the top five. I was like, oh, but then I heard you correctly. And yeah, all joking aside, it is super cool to see Smart Self Storage back on board, and hopefully we see them at more races in the future as well. And all right, guys, so who's going to do really well this weekend?
This is hard this weekend.
I'm trying not to pick the obvious. I'm going to go with, actually, although he described it as the race he's most concerned about in the remaining six races, I'm going to go with Alex Rossi. I think he's just completely dialed in right now. And, you know, he's got that championship in sight and knows in order to really have a strong chance of beating Joseph Newgarden in the championship, he needs more wins. So Rossi is going to be my pick.
I am going to go with Ferrucci. I'm going to go out there a little bit. I think he's got the right attitude going into it. I think he's kind of fired up, so to say. So I think he's going to do really well.
Oh, Jess, you didn't say Piggott.
No, I didn't.
It's like a yearly tradition.
I know. Well, last year he did really, really good for me.
Well, there you go, everybody. Ferrucci's going to finish on the podium this year. That's pretty much what was just guaranteed right here. I don't know. Can I say Newgarden, or is that lame?
No, you can.
Okay. Well, no, that is kind of lame. I'm going to go with Marcus Ericsson. Why not? I think Schmidt-Peterson has really got that track figured out. Obviously, Hinch did very well last year with the win, and Wickens did very well as well, was pretty much in line for a podium spot. And, you know, unfortunately, with the late pit stop there, it didn't happen. Ericsson did really well at Indy, and Texas escapes me. I think he might have been lingering somewhere in the top 10 area. I think he finished like ninth or so. So I think his oval craft isn't half bad. So if I had to pick somebody that was not Joseph Newgarden, I would definitely pick Marcus Ericsson. Maybe he's a dark horse for the weekend. And as far as the something that's been pointed out on social media is that the race this year starts at 6:45 p.m. and it's going to be a pretty hot day. As far as the track conditions, tires, everything like that, you know, last year it was held, I think it was sort of closer to noon. And with the race now at 6 p.m. on a Saturday, do you think that's going to help the racing at all? Do you think the racing is going to be better or worse than last year or anything like that, guys?
I think it's going to be really slick. You know, that track's going to have been sitting there in the sun pretty much all day at that point. So I have a feeling it's going to be slick. It's going to be kind of ugly. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be fun. Do I think it's going to help things? I don't know. That I'm kind of torn on. I think it's going to be a very hot physical race for the drivers. So I think that's another thing that could lead it to being interesting. So I guess I'm leaning toward the side of yes.
Yeah. You know, the one concerning thing that James Hinchcliffe mentioned this weekend, and I think I've seen online a few times, is the sun turning into, I don't know, turn three or turn four at the start of the race might be pretty brutal to deal with. And I think Connor Daly said that on his episode this week with Jim Aiello. But I think all in all, it's definitely good. And plus, the one thing Jess didn't mention that I'm just going to add on to is they IndyCar up the boost level for iOS, which should help a little bit. Yeah, it's going to be hotter than heck out there all weekend. So the track's going to be slick. It's going to be physical. It's going to be a real good battle.
Yeah, it's doesn't look like it's going to rain for the first time in forever. It seems like a yearly tradition that's going to rain at Iowa. Now that I say that, it probably will just randomly downpour at some point. And then the other part is that it's not on a Sunday anymore, which I think is super good for, you know, folks like us in Minnesota. I know plenty of people from Indianapolis and other states around Iowa, kind of like Colin Taylor. It's, you know, just now that it's on a Saturday, they can make the trek down and instead of doing it all at once on Sunday, which was brutal at times. So yeah, I think the racing should be good. I totally forgot to get your guys' struggle predictions because I'm kind of dumb. So we got the good. We forgot to get the struggle. So who do you guys think is going to struggle this weekend at Iowa?
Oh, boy.
I'll go. So I think, and this I know is low-hanging fruit, so sorry to both of you since I'm going first, but I'm taking Marco. He's had a really poor season on ovals, so I just don't see him getting it turned around, and I think he's going to have another really rough one.
I'm going to go the complete opposite direction here and go with Felix Rosenquist. He's done all right on ovals. Iowa in 2,000-degree heat is going to be a different beast that he hasn't experienced yet, so I think we might see Rosenquist struggle a little bit this weekend.
To Jess's point, so shameless plug for driver ratings, Marco's third to last at Iowa among active drivers over the last three seasons. So I think she's onto something there. Mine is going to be oval specialist Ed Carpenter, who has also not particularly done very well at Iowa since his memorable scrap with Sage Karam in 2015. Last 3 years, he's been okay, but seeing how well Piggott did last year compared to what Carpenter did was kind of an alarm bell for me. So to me, I don't know if just he doesn't have the place figured out quite as much as he would say in Indianapolis or Texas. So I'll go with Ed Carpenter on that one. This one, it kind of touches on one we talked about earlier with who's in the hot seat. Is there any driver in particular this weekend that has a lot to prove either on ovals or just for their season as a whole or anything like that?
Yeah, I think somebody, I really want to name two, but I'm going to stick to one. I don't want to say he's a lot to prove because he's not having a terrible year, but this is a track where Graham Rahal could really use a podium finish. He's only got one podium finish in 11 races right now, and you know, he was doing pretty well at Indy until he got involved in that accident. So I think this is one where Graham really needs to just get something, get a top five to just get that momentum going for the rest of the year.
I'm going to go in a completely different direction here. I think that Connor Daly needs to have a really good day. I know he's, you know, looking for sponsors, looking for a ride for next season. And I think that this could be a good opportunity for him to show what he can do. So I think he needs to take full advantage of it.
For a team like Andretti Autosport, who's always done well at Iowa, I think this is starting to get to crunch time for Zach Veach, and he had some pretty good performances at ovals last year that it seems like this would be a great place for him to kind of put his foot down and establish himself as a guy who's going to have a really good last six races. So hopefully we see something out of Zach Veach this weekend that can give us some positives to build on for the coming races and whatnot. And, you know, with Andretti Autosport doing very well at the track over the years, you know, Team Penske up until a couple of years ago had really never done that well at Iowa as far as just straight up wins until Elio Castroneves won. Will Power is one guy who's never won at Iowa, but the most alarming since 2007 when the race started, a guy who's never won at Iowa has actually been Scott Dixon. And question to you guys is, do you ever think Scott Dixon is going to win, and or what's it going to take for Scott Dixon to win at Iowa finally?
Can you ever really count Scott Dixon out?
Maybe at Iowa, just because I guess the stats aren't there, question mark.
I'm going to go with, I don't know if it'll be this year, but will we ever see Scott Dixon win at Iowa? Probably. He's a kind of like a magician, so I'm sure he can pull something out of his hat and win at Iowa at some point.
I'll never say never, but I might not have quite as much confidence as you do. I think he just really struggles. And I think in order to win at Iowa, he's going to have one of those perfect storm kind of days where everything just goes right and he doesn't put a wheel wrong. The team doesn't do anything wrong. It would just have to be absolutely perfect for him to take it.
Yeah, and kind of on that, it's just, it's almost like kind of scratching your head going, what's missing? You know, what is it that has caused him to not win? I know he's dominated a couple of years, or I wouldn't say necessarily dominated, but definitely been in contention a lot of years. And for it to never happen is kind of surprising. But yeah, Mr. Knapp, Mike, and myself will be at Iowa this weekend. So if you guys see any of us, feel free to say, hey, I believe we do have a live show that will be giving you guys updates on when it's going to be occurring on Friday. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, sorry, I got really excited. it will be during the driver autograph session, which is 4 p.m. Iowa time. And yes, it's going to be 101 degrees during the live show, but we're going to switch it up. And we've got a pretty cool show planned. Not going to spoil it just yet, but we should be up there for most of the autograph session. And I will try to bring a couple bottles of water for those of you who will be standing in the line. If you listen to this, just come up to the stage and ask for some water. Hopefully I remember that.
He's so nice. He's got everybody's back. He's always thinking about everybody else. Nice guy. So yeah, definitely come say hey to us. As far as what to expect at the tracks, having gone every year since 2007, I'm going to be completely honest. The amenities that Mike talks about at like Barber or Toronto, you know, always sound great. Or what Jess was saying about St. Petersburg being really awesome. I was okay. To be honest, it's nothing earth shattering. A lot of their merchandise is NASCAR themed. They have, you know, the standard IndyCar store. The food is, you know, you got options for sure. They used to have a Culver's and then that closed down and that's really sad. But the best thing about Iowa for sure, like I was telling Mike earlier before the show, is that at the end of the day, the racing is really cool and the track, getting to see all the way around it based on where you're sitting in the stands is awesome. So I would definitely recommend it. And then there is a fan walk at the bottom of the track. So if you take a trolley down there, which is free, you can definitely get to see some cool stuff behind the scenes. I don't believe there's going to be paddock access unless you pay for it, but the fan walk next to the pits is super cool. And getting pretty close to the action, you know, during practice or whatnot is never a bad thing. So definitely check it out. And if you see us on Friday or Saturday, feel free to wave and say hi and we'd be happy to talk with you.
Assuming we don't melt into the racetrack before the weekend ends.
I don't know. The weather in Minnesota this week is getting me prepared. We'll say that. So I feel like my body is getting ready based on how much I've had to sweat in my car this week.
Yeah, totally fair. So guys, it's time for everybody's favorite segment of the week.
And now it's time for Pit Lane Parlay's Pitfalls of the Week.
And thank you again to Editor Andy for coming up with the jingle there. I'll start it out here. I don't know. This is probably isn't my my best pitfall ever, but Williams didn't do anything silly this weekend. well, I'll leave it at that. But I don't know what part of this article I want to pitfall the most, but Formula E champion Jean-Éric Vergne was handed one day of community service for unsportsmanlike behavior. During the race, his teammate had some damage, and he radioed to his crew to tell his teammate to pull over and, you know, bring out a safety car. Come on, man. One, that's a dumb comment. He said, oh, well, you know, I was saying it because of the safety of the race. The car had some damage. Just feels kind of like a cheap way to win. And I agree with the, you know, giving him some sort of penalty. I don't mind that he still won the championship, but his Vergne's comments after the penalty were, well, now drivers know, he said, I'm glad to be made an example of, because now we know what we can get away with. I feel like this is one of those just like what type moments. Like, okay, you got the penalty, fine, you admit fault, and then you go, well, now we know what we can get away with, or, you know, now other drivers know what they can get away with.
I can say everything but this.
Yeah. I mean, does one day of community service really deter you from saying something on the radio like that? Because I know I would laugh at it and just go, okay. And then the next time I wanted to say something stupid, I would say something stupid on the radio again, knowing that maybe this time I only get 2 days of community service.
God, I always love Mike's pitfalls because he always says a quote that I actually haven't heard. And then I get like he gets my honest reaction to that quote. And it's usually of despair or dismay at what people actually said. There was one, I think there was a Williams one like 2 or 3 months ago where you said it, and I'm like, no, they didn't actually say that. So your John Eric Vare one, this one is another classic. Like, what on earth?
I had to dig deep for this one this week. Cause like,
no, it's really good. I always appreciate them because it, God.
Well, I will turn it over to whoever wants to go next.
Yeah, I'll go. Oh, Rich Energy. or I don't know, maybe I should call you Lightning Bolt.
Oh, God.
Christ.
yeah, God, I mean, there's not even like, I don't even really need to elaborate on it because that right there says it all. Rich Energy went into total meltdown mode. I'm going to be honest, I missed part of it, which is unfortunate because, you know, I mean, I know it was like my favorite kind of hot mess disaster. But, yeah, so the whatever he was, CEO, president, whatever, I don't even know, William Story has sold his shares of the company, and immediately they went to work changing the name of the company from Rich Energy to Lightning Bolt. I can only imagine that it's only a matter of time before this goes really poorly, because I'm sure they're going to, you know, have some more legal issues with different things. Oh, I don't know. The fact that there's a Lightning Bolt energy drink and there's a Volt energy drink. And
what could go wrong?
We can only imagine what their logo is going to look like. So yeah, I mean, that's just it. Good old Rich Energy.
Probably gonna be another stag or something along those lines. And my favorite thing is that Mike just got a shirt from Rich Energy, which at the time was worth about 25 cents. And now that they're no longer a thing, it's probably worth about $10 now.
Woo!
Yeah, I'm rich.
Pun.
Before I get to that, oh, I didn't even mean to make that a pun. You know, the best part about the CEO, you know, selling his shares of the company is then he tweeted, I'll be back, with an Arnold Schwarzenegger line to pretend he's the Terminator. Just one, cringeworthy, and two, what in the heck is going on? I woke up Saturday morning walking to the track in Toronto and had about 7 different Rich Energy tweets that were just completely ridiculous. So it is totally understandable that Jess or anybody may have missed one or two, because there was a lot this weekend. There one after Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen crashed into each other, where they'd had the little school bus looking drawing thing, was so bad. But if I may, Toby Sowery in Indy Lights has the Rich Energy / Lightning Volt logo on the back of his, or on the front of his rear wing. I saw some guys in Toronto with Rich Energy t-shirts on, and like a 12-year-old, I went up and I said, oh my God, where did you get those t-shirts? They said, just go up to Toby. So thank you, Toby and BN Racing, for providing the Rich Energy t-shirt. I will value that like it's my favorite t-shirt ever. I did get a lot of hate on social media and a lot of comments calling me stupid because they thought I genuinely was happy about Rich Energy and didn't get the sarcasm. But that's okay. That's part of the fun. Yeah, I'll leave it at that.
was a good time. I love the tweet, and I will forever cherish the rich energy era of Formula One. It was a good time, but like all things, it unfortunately comes to end at some point. But yeah, moving on to my pitfall. If you didn't get the hint earlier in the episode, mine's actually going to be willpower. The moves that we saw in the first lap and kind of his racing as a whole just unfortunately reeked of desperation. And I think that stemmed from just a poor qualifying effort. I think he started somewhere like 16th or something, 17th in that area. And so on the first lap of the race, going into turn one, he made a bonsai move, which was pretty risky, but he got away with it, so good for him. Then heading down to turn three, he made another bonsai three-wide move, and that was a little, we'll say, more risky than the first one. And Veach and Hunter Wright cooperated very well to make that work, and everybody got through fine. And then the one into turn nine, which eventually led to the wreck, he tried to dive bomb Ray Hall, who was already attempting a pass on Andretti, and that one did not work. And so, unfortunately, Andretti, Ray Hall, Power, Hunter Ray, Erickson, Kanaan, a couple others all just got scooped up into it. And basically, Power just ruined his own race by being way too ambitious. And it's unfortunate because, again, we've been discussing the championship, and that's not what he needed. As we said earlier, we think he's now done because of this and other races this season. And to me, it's also not the best thing to be doing when there's all this talk about will Rossi be a Penske driver. And, you know, we didn't really discuss that this week just because we've been discussing it a bunch recently. But I don't know. It's definitely going to be a couple of tricky races here for Power. I definitely think for a guy who's done so much in his career, the fact that he has to worry about his ride is a little weird just because he's been so good and so consistent in his career. But Toronto, in my mind, was one of those poorer showings from Power that we don't normally see anymore. That was maybe a thing that he did in his rookie seasons, but not recently.
Can I ask you guys a question about willpower? And this is after listening to the wonderful episode that Jim Aiello and Connor Daly did. Connor Daly brought up the fact that there are many people out there claiming conspiracy theory that willpower crashed on the last lap to help Joseph Newgarden fourth after Newgarden smacked the wall pretty hard. And you could tell he was really struggling to keep that car handling somewhat decent as the race finished up there. So are you on the conspiracy theory train or not?
No. I think Penske has proven time and time again that team orders don't exist for him, including helping teammates. So I do not buy into it.
I can't do my answer justice here. Mike, can you give me a no real quick?
No.
Thank you. I think it's maybe if Verizon was still the title sponsor, I would laugh at seeing that on someone's tweet. No, there's no conspiracy. And for anything, it was, you know, Pagano had what, like five corners to go or something. So I don't think he went the full pace or the full cool down lap too, and made it back to pit road just fine. So I think there was no conspiracy there. And Power looked like he made a legitimate effort to get out of it too.
And by Pagano, you mean Newgarden only had five corners left.
Oh, was it? Well, because I saw conspiracy theories that Power wrecked so that Pagano was safe on fuel.
Yeah, I did.
So I guess it could go both ways, technically.
I think Power was just pushing hard because he was in 10th and he wasn't too far off of the guys right in front of him. So, yeah, I don't think it's much of a conspiracy theory. I think this is one of the weaker IndyCar conspiracy theories that have surfaced over the years there. So with that, thank you to everybody listening week in, week out. Come say hi to us at the track and check out the live show. It should be a lot of fun, and I hope everybody enjoys Iowa, whether they're at the track or watching from home. So with that, Jess, go ahead and sign us off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.